Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello and welcome to the Simple Politics Podcast. We are back. It is a very special day that we're recording. It's the 29th of February. So big shout out to everyone who has their birthday on the 29th of February. Just, you are very special. Something that's not so special is my guests today. They're not my guests.
Oh, quite right.
My fellow co-podcasters, Tatton and Diane. How are you both?
Oh, you know, very mundane, the ordinary, not special.
I'd say reliable. Reliable. Yeah. You're always here bringing the good stuff.
Yeah, yes. But it's very funny. The 29th of Feb is very funny because I saw something yesterday that said, whatever you do on the 29th of Feb won't appear in your social media memories for 4 years. So enjoy it. Have a good one. Like, do something wild.
You see, I'm furious today.
Oh, God.
I'm so angry because, right, this leap year thing, let's get this out there. This leap year thing, I get that we have to, like, it's about the world circling the sun and stuff like that, right? But why is it the 29th of February? Why are we extending one of the worst months of the bloody year, right? Why can't it be the 32nd of August? And we could have another day of August. Wouldn't that be nice? Why can't we could sprinkle it through June? 45 minutes extra sleep every night in June. And then you've got your whole day all sorted. We could do bank holidays twice. Right? Oh, that was a nice bank holiday, you'd think. Oh, I get another one. I get another one. And then you get a week and that's 4 days in a row. We could make something so glorious out of leap years, and instead we have the 29th of February. Oh, limping through February, having to endure another day. So, lovely people, we're going to have a campaign about this. We're going to be the 32nd of Augusters, right?
Yeah.
We're going to have placards. We're going to be so intense about it. James Cleverly is going to be like, oh, this 32nd of August thing is a hate campaign. And I haven't written a song yet, but we're going to have songs and it's going to be glorious. And in 4 years' time, you heard it here first, in 4 years' time, they will have buckled.
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to have the 32nd of August as our leap year day. You wait. I'm a very effective campaigner.
What happens to the rhyme, Tatton? 28 days clear, 29 in each leap year. I mean, you can't mess with the rhyme.
I think we're creative enough. AI can sort it out. We'll bung it into something AI-ish and it'll be like, oh, here we go, 32nd of August.
That rhymes with nothing.
I mean, well, AI will sort it.
Poor February. It normally only gets 28 days. It's the shorter, and just every 4 years, it gets to almost be the same length as every other month.
In the bin with February.
You only want it to be a longer August because that's your birthday month. I see right through you.
I mean, that's literally the last reason it would be in August. I mean, I would skip the 20th of August and go 33 days. instead. The 33rd of August. So I didn't have to do that nonsense.
Tatton, before we started this podcast, you said you were going to launch a campaign. Was that the campaign?
Yeah, this is my campaign.
Okay, well, I had no idea. So I gave you a segue that can like, we're just so in sync. Simple Politics, yeah. We're just like, look at us go.
No, like, this is the hill on which I die.
Okay.
This matters. I've come up with this about half an hour ago, and I've decided that my next 4 years will be dedicated, and it's going to be such a wonderful victory for the people.
Okay.
Well, yes. Good luck.
Good luck with that, Tatton.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Pretty quickly, we're going to go.
I've got more to say on it.
And the top posts of the week. So this is the section of the podcast where we look at what has been most popular on our social media this week. So Tatton, what was our third most popular post of this week?
I mean, the third most popular post was Lee Anderson saying Islamophobic things on telly. It's a TV channel. We're going to talk about TV a bit later, but it's a TV channel that's designed to get people to say punchy things. And he overstepped the mark. It is quite a hard mark to find, because you're supposed to say things on GB News that are just shy of the line so that everyone can have a debate about it and it's all that kind of thing, right? And he well overstepped it. The government got rid of him pretty quickly, so he's no longer a conservative MP. And I mean, they did get rid of him much quicker than the Labour Party got rid of their candidate in Rochdale, which they're like quite keen on pointing out. It's disgraceful, but government ministers still can't say it's Islamophobic. They're always like, what he said was wrong. And when they're pushed about whether it's Islamophobic, they always say no. In fact, LBC, Nick Ferrari, just cut a government minister off in the middle of the interview and said, shut up. There's no, you're not getting down to it. And it looks ridiculous. It's wrong. Why is it wrong? It's wrong. They've got nowhere to go with it. Anyway, he's now sitting as an independent MP. There's been lots of talk of him joining Reform, and Reform have suggested that they don't want him. He's too toxic. And they said they've already turned down two MPs who asked to join them because they don't want Reform to be the home of toxic MPs. Now, someone tweeted, that's a bit like saying, my girlfriend goes to another school,
yes.
You don't know her.
Yes, it really feels that way.
We, lots of MPs, I get so many MPs, says Richard Tice.
You just don't know them.
You just don't know them. But you can see why, actually. You can see why they might turn down MPs. If you just went where all the... it became a party where the disgraced MPs go, like Benton, this corrupt MP from Blackpool, if he asked to go, but like, well, but he's corrupt. You don't want him. So it's possible we won't see Lee Anderson joining, and it's possible that they're saying this now because talks have broken down in some way. But, you know, time will tell. For now, he's independent. He says he wants to fight the next election. I can't see a way back for him fighting the next election for the Conservative Party. It'd be almost impossible for the Conservative Party to say, yeah, welcome back.
Yeah.
So,
and he hasn't apologised. So that's, you know.
Well, he said he was
clumsy.
That's actually why he was... removed from the party, isn't it? Not for what he said, but because he refused to apologise for what he said. So.
Yeah. So, you know, there we go. I think we've given him enough airtime.
Okay, then let's move on to the second most popular post of the week. Diane.
Okay, second most popular piece. Now, Tatton found this one, so he'll probably jump in a sec, but it's around a BBC investigation on car insurance, okay? Car insurance is expensive and horrendous at the best of times, but they explored some details on postcodes, okay? And what they found, and they did it numerous, 6,000 times they checked this, that if you are...
That poor intern.
Pardon?
That poor intern.
Yeah, this is spreadsheet.
There doing it.
I know. Oh my goodness. But basically, they looked and using the Steam driver details, using everything that was the same. If you live somewhere in England that has got a high ethnicity, high ethnic population, you're more likely to pay more for your car insurance, despite some other things like road accidents and crime being equal. Okay. And I think that's the point you really wanted to make, Tatton. It was despite those things being equal, this still seems to be the case. And it just, I mean, this went off in the comments hugely because there were some people sharing their actual lived experience of this. And there was people sort of, you know, saying, is it to do with social class as well? And is it to do, you know, there's all sorts of factors people were asking about. The point is, we don't really know how car insurance firms do it, do we? It's a little bit shady, you know? And I think that they could help themselves massively by being transparent about this and how this has worked out, because it feels not right at all. So, hugely popular post, lots to question, I think.
It is. I mean, it's so opaque. I happen to have been doing my car insurance yesterday, and the cheapest quote was like 600 quid and it went up to 3000 quid. And it's like sometimes there's an element of kind of reassuring the expensive, like you might want to pay a bit more because you're going to get a good
cover,
a good insurance or whatever. But when you click through, there's like almost no difference between them whatsoever. And how on earth does that happen?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's really confusing. I think the point did come down on this too. People were saying that it's because they have different rates of road accidents and crime in the two areas. And I got really frustrated and I had a little comment on there that said, they had the same road accidents and crime.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the point. But, yeah, you know, who knows how these things work.
Be interesting to see if there's any response from that industry. Because it's only been quite hot, hasn't it? So,
Do you know what? We talk about institutional racism, right? Where no one involved sometimes, I mean, when the police describes institutionally racist, there were racist people involved. But on here, it's perfectly possible that nobody racist at any point has come up with this system, but it ends up being a racist system. And that's where we get the problems, right?
Yeah,
exactly. So it'll all be done by algorithms, and ultimately algorithms are just lines of code that are written by humans that all, you know, have these biases built in. That's one of the problems with algorithms and AI and things. But that's a whole other topic. Before we get onto that, shall we go to the most popular post of the week, Tatton?
The most popular post of the week. Well, I mean, Diane wrote this one, and it's about shall we have shorter summer holes, which is the hardest sentence to say in the whole world. The point is, we have these 6 week summer holidays, and I'm a teacher, and I've had, you know, young people tell me they've forgotten how to write over the holidays. I remember going back to school and be like, oh, I can't even write anymore. This is ridiculous. And young people do 100% take a backward step in what they're capable of in the classroom over that 6 week holiday. That is my lived experience, my anecdotal evidence is that is 100% the case. So the Nuffield Foundation were like, let's get rid of it. Like, the reason there's 6 weeks is so that people can help with the harvest and stuff. Like, not many of our young people are helping with the harvest during that time. They're not picking strawberries particularly, except if they have a lovely day out to pick your own little farm, because that's fun. So let's get rid of it. And then they will have better progress. We can have longer holidays elsewhere in the year to give people more of a break when we have these kind of long slog terms, all kinds of things. But obviously the disadvantage is that you lose your 6 week holiday. Like, I remember as a kid breaking up for the summer holidays, and it was just like, wow, all of this is ahead of me. I'm going to do so much. I mean, obviously, I ended up just sitting around doing nothing. But at the beginning of the holidays, it feels like all of these things are there for you to go out and do and achieve, and all the fun you're going to have, and, you know, the girls you're going to kiss, although never kiss anyone, you know, this stretching out. And that's important, like having that time to be a child, to be a teenager, is really important, because school is so much more pressurized now than it used to be. So 6 full weeks off.
Yeah,
I think it's a really, really tricky call.
It's almost like I saw a lot of our followers repost this on their own stories with little polls, you know, that you can do on Insta and Facebook.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And nearly all of them were 50-50, 49-51. You know, it's so close, I think, in terms of how the country feel about it. But I don't think it's going to change anytime soon, because people are so nostalgic for that long summer.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to change. No. It's not going to change. It's like one of these institutions that we might want to change.
Yeah.
But like, this is how things are done. Mm. And so much of our country is run on this is how things are done. And it's problematic in the policing, it's problematic in education, it's problematic in the health service, it's problematic in the prison. Like, it's problematic everywhere. The, you know, the tyranny of what everybody knows.
Yeah.
Like, moving on. Charlotte, what do you think? Should we get rid of 6-week holidays?
I think that we should ask the teachers and see what they think, because they're the experts. And certainly not me, a childless PhD student who doesn't get any holiday at all.
Oh,
get out your violins,
I give you
everyone.
Holiday. I give you holiday.
Oh, so from Simple Politics, I do. And I do get 2 weeks over Christmas. And to be fair, I'm not the most hardworking PhD student. So
barely a PhD student at all.
I am. I work full time all the time. My mum's listening, Tan.
I'm so sorry. Dan, what do you think? Yes or no?
No, I think...
Sorry, I haven't been clear. Is that no, we shouldn't cut them?
No, we shouldn't cut them. It's a bit of a slog. If you're working and a parent, it's a slog to have your kids off for 6 weeks. It is, you know, it's not easy. But I love the fact that you could just forget to write because you've been up a tree for 6 weeks. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Who does that these days, Doug?
Diane's kids.
Yeah.
That's where they
I forgot how wholesome Diane and they're on the beach playing.
Yeah.
As a teacher, as a former teacher at least, I would say it's worth taking the hit. It's worth in September having to do some catching up and revision on what's happened, because I think a really good solid block to be you, to go out and do what you want to do, or stay, like, just be a child or be a teenager. And it's great when you're a child and you have all this playtime or whatever, and it's great when you're a teenager and you can do, you know, go out and be independent, and the things you learn during that time are invaluable. You know, I worked at Argos for a bit in that time, and I learned a whole lot about how conveyor belts work and the little system with the little pieces of paper. Like, you learn things when you're not at school, and 6 weeks gives you that time.
Right. Well, I think we're all divided too.
And also, we should have the 32nd of August as our leap year.
Can you imagine how difficult it'll be for the people born on 32nd of August? They're like, this whole thing about when you start school, if you're born late August, good luck with the campaign.
That would be the cutoff, wouldn't it? It's going to be a great campaign.
I wish you nothing but happiness.
Thank you very much.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today.
That's shopify.com/system.
Now it's time for the mailbag. So this is where we answer your questions. And first up, we have Louise, who asks, why do politicians behave so badly at PMQs? Who wants to take this?
Well, it's a Parliament question, and I should talk about Parliament because I know about Parliament.
You do.
Oh, gosh, it's so awful. I mean, it's just, the thing is, it's always been awful. It's really easy to look at it now and go, oh, it's so much worse than it used to be. But, you know, it's not. Like, Kinnock and Thatcher used to scream at each other. Like, and the noise in the background is, I mean, it's football-ish. It's sports team. It's cheering your person. Pretty much regardless of what your person is saying. It's about looking like you're the winner. It's about dominating and showing how strong your side is. Very occasionally, you get some good questions and it's really clear that the Prime Minister can't answer them or doesn't want to answer them because they're really good questions. Or alternatively, sometimes questions get asked and the Prime Minister's like, well, actually, we're smashing this. Like, what are you doing? So there is sometimes buried deep inside PMQs some nuggets of scrutiny of what the Prime Minister is up to. And that's the whole point. But it is still this set piece. It's what everyone watches and everyone wants their side to come out on top. And we also get now questions that are only there to be clipped for social media. The point isn't what the answer is. The point is to start to so that, and both main parties certainly do it. So Rishi Sunak's got answers written for him and he just has to shoehorn in the bit when he says that, whatever Starmer said. And Starmer has, you know, it's obviously his six questions are pre-written and he doesn't diverge from them. If the Prime Minister gives an answer, he will pretty much ignore it and just carry on with what he, you know, it's all this stuff, social media, domination, looking like you're winning. I mean, it's nonsense. I mean, it can be quite watchable sometimes, but it's generally nonsense.
Can I make a quick observation? Two quick observations that I know you'll come back on. One, the time in recent history where it felt more serious and more collaborative was obviously COVID, right? Because there were times in that where Starmer would be like, obviously, we're going to vote with you on this and we're going to support you on this because it's for the greater good. So let's talk about the stuff we have in common and want, you know, so that felt different for a while. Obviously, that's all gone. That's by the by. But
we saw that Ukraine at the beginning of the Ukraine invasion. And true. When, you know, after October the 7th attacks.
Yeah.
We saw a lot of consensus.
So there are times, aren't there? There are times when they can pull it together. They just need to do that more. And the other thing, and I know, Tatton, you've spoke about this before, but it's very much the setup of the UK Parliament, isn't it? If you look at other European parliaments or Scotland or others, they're in the round, they're set up differently. This is set up for a two-sided, you know, for at loggerheads thing, isn't it? It's yeah.
It was so the House of Commons was bombed in the Second World War and they were rebuilding it and they said, should we do a semicircle? And Winston Churchill was like, nope. Nope, we're gonna have a fight every day. Mm. I mean, it's also partly so that you can have an actual debate because you're facing people and the room is small enough. They also talk about expanding it because it doesn't fit 650 MPs in it. Mm. But by being small, you can have an eye contact, genuine debate with someone with whom you disagree. So it's not just so you can have a fight. It's also to improve. Because when it's a semicircle, you're kind of standing facing kind of nothing. You stand and you deliver your speech.
You have to do lots of turning
around. You have to do lots of turning around. And it's not as debatey. It's more series of speeches-y, is the idea of it.
Mm. Interesting.
I've definitely had debates with someone in a semicircle lecture theatre, so it can be done.
Of course it can be done. And, you know, like, I'm not, you know, they clearly do it in Scotland all the time. They fight tooth and nail in there sometimes. Yeah. But that's the thinking behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it comes back, it's because of the days when Parliament started, when it was in like a chapel. That's how it started. Anyway, before we go too much into the history of that, Ivan asks, how do you get into politics and form a political view?
Right, so today I've been really cross about the 29th of February, right? Something's just upset me and I've now got a political view on it, right? That's how it works. It doesn't have to be something that upsets you, but something you want to change. That's the way into politics. Like the committee system in the House of Parliament doesn't make a difference. You know, how do you feel about your bins? Do you want them to be taken out more often, or do you want that money to be saved and put in social care? What about the library? Like, is a library more useful than, again, let's go to social care, right? If that money, if there's a pot of money and that pot is a small pot of money, is it worth spending money on the library when you've got to look after people and people's bottoms need wiping, right? How these are all political issues. The how often, how long the bus runs for, as well as the small boats, as well as all the things that make the headlines. You're already into politics. You've already got opinions on things. You might not have a party political, oh, I'm a big fan of the Liberal Democrats, but you have political views, even if you don't think of them as political views.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. Do you know how many times you're maybe in the pub or you talk to someone who says, yeah, no, I'm not into politics, not into politics. And then they go on to tell you something they really strongly believe in.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah, I mean, like,
yeah, you are.
When I speak to teenagers, it's almost, especially key stage four, rather key stage five, they're almost always like, ugh, what's this politics guy? You know, I'm like, all right, let's talk about it. Let's find out. What? And I mean, they're actually at school, which is like the most politicized thing in the world. So yeah, Ivan, you've got political views. Don't sweat it. Don't be like, oh, I haven't got a serious enough political view. Because of course you do. Because you matter and your opinion matters.
Nice. Dawn says, I'm interested in something around how the media and government encourages division, which leads us nicely on to the third section of the podcast, which is normally where we take a closer look at a particular politician. But this week, we're doing Media Watch. That's right. We're going to look at the whole of the media, put them in the spotlight. Tatton, take it away.
Well, the media landscape is very different depending on who you are. Older people tend to watch television, not just television, linear television. Like, you know, when you go to like the TV guide on your TV, I mean, you've probably not done that in a very long time, but older, of course Diane does it. but older people tend to watch linear TV. So on TV, you've got channels that appeal to more older people whose views tend to be on the right. So you've obviously got BBC News, which is, you know, the BBC, and Sky News, but you've also got GB News, and you've also got Talk TV. Now, I was on Talk TV on Friday, and I made a comment about how attacks on Muslims were every bit as important as attacks on Jews. And I got to say, I didn't think that was a particularly punchy comment to have made. And the host shouted at me that I can't come on his show and call him outrageous. And he suggested I should leave the studio. And I didn't know if I had to leave the studio. Yeah. It was quite full on. But that's the thing. Talk TV wants viewers who are outraged by things, it needs to be exciting or they'll go elsewhere. And by elsewhere, I mean GB News. So they are in a battle to appeal to older people who have kind of more center-right, right-wing views. And they need to be dramatic and they need to have the story. And so Lee Anderson mouths off and is racist. And, you know, I get told to go get out the studio and all of this stuff, right? So that's the TV side of things. There is no left-wing TV channel. TV no. news channel.
No, there isn't. There is
because the left wing tends to be younger, and young people don't watch linear TV. So that's why that is. And then kind of you've got kind of newspapers, which I don't know who buys newspapers, because you've still got a good spread from the Guardian, the Times, the Telegraph, the I newspaper. I've got the I newspaper app, and on my tablet at the weekend, I sit and have a coffee and I read the I newspaper, and it's a nice way to spend, you know, a half an hour on a Saturday morning. And they've got good puzzles.
They've
I do
got
my
really
Sudoku
good puzzles
in there. Yeah, I enjoy that, but I don't know who goes. But people do, and you can tell people do, because every supermarket and every corner shop still has loads of newspapers, and they're not stupid. If they didn't sell, they would have like Easter eggs or whatever they would have on those shelves. So they do sell. It's difficult. Like the Telegraph is being sold at the moment. And that's the interest, because that's been sold to someone from abroad. Should people from abroad be able to buy newspapers? But Telegraph is no longer a particularly serious newspaper. It's obsessed with reform. Richard Tice, the leader of reform, is in there every day. Nigel Farage is in there every day. They're traditionally a newspaper of conservatives. But again, they go where their audience are. So if only older centre-right, right-wing people are buying that paper, they will be more centre-right, right-wing. The Guardian manages to do okay. I think they probably sell a lot in North London. But, you know, that's newspapers. And then you may well be listening to this thinking, okay, we've talked a lot about old people, older people. Where do young people fit in? And you know the answer to this. It's social media. That's where young people are. It's TikTok. It's Snapchat. It's Instagram. And I mean, that's Facebook. But that's where, and that's where you will get your left-wing news. And that's where you will get all kinds of pages pushing a more of a left-wing agenda. So people talk about echo chambers, and it's not, it's not just echo chambers. It's entirely siloed. It's entirely grouped off separate media formats for different people. And there are, of course, there are right-wing people on social media. I mean, they mostly hang out on Twitter and Telegram and Truth Central. What's it called?
Truth Social.
Trump's one. Truth Social. It's just brilliant. Imagine having a platform for lies that you call Truth. I mean, it's so 1984. I love it. Well done, him. Oh, that's Trump's. That's Donald Trump's one that he set up when he was kicked off Twitter. So that's where we are. And trust on social media is a really interesting thing. Newspapers have trust because they've got that history behind them, that weight of hundreds of years of coming out. TV has some trust because linear TV is like, it's a respectable, trustworthy thing. Social media, no one knows who to trust, really. And we've got all this division. I mean, I want to touch briefly on SP before we all discuss it, because there is no reason why anyone should trust SP. It was me making stuff up, putting it on social media, right? It's now Diane, Charlotte and me, and we just kind of look around and we put things on. The only way I can persuade you to trust SP is to look at our tens of thousands of posts. Look back and see what we've done. That's the only basis of trust. And other people try to get trust by appealing to their their own echo chamber stuff. If you don't like the Conservative, if you're on social media, so you're a bit lefty, and you don't like Rishi Sunak, you kind of get trust by saying, oh, Rishi Sunak is smelly. And then everyone goes, oh, yeah, I'm joining you on this. Oh, he's so smelly, right? So campaigning doesn't need trust because it's clear what they're doing. And then you do get a grey area where people pretend to not be campaigning. They pretend to be kind of impartial when they're actually a campaigning organization. And that's really dodgy. And that's where you need to have critical thinking. Mm. And you need to be aware of what's going on social media. You'd be able to read in and read between the lines. I think the whole thing is fascinating, but it's all driven by the audience, is the point.
Mm.
And I'm going to shut up now.
Except us, where we do our own thing, regardless of audience.
Oh, we don't give a shit.
No. And that's great. And that is great.
It's not true. It's not true, Diane. We care deeply about what people want. And we're always looking at how many likes and how many comments. Oh, we're not swayed. But we do care that we're putting out the stories that people are most interested in. So we have conversations, don't we, where it's like, oh, this is such a fascinating little debate that's just happened in the House of Commons. Mm. Yeah, we're not going to post on it because no one will care.
No one will care, yeah.
So we are also swayed by our audience.
Yeah, true. A little bit. But I think you're right. I think for us, it is a very potentially scary year with election year coming because social media, in particularly where we are, and newspapers and TV and whatever else, it's going to escalate this stuff around sensationalism and around drawing people into to certain platforms and around, you know, just saying the thing that's going to get the biggest hook, even if there's a grain of truth in it. So I think for us, like Tatton said, all we can ask you to do is look at our record, look at what we've done. You know, we will keep on doing what we do because that's what we do.
And we don't always get it right. Don't always get it right, but we always hold our hands up when we've got it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the difference between us and a lot of social media channels. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and then it's pointed out that that's not true. And they don't change. So, I mean, we could talk about that all day, let's be real. But unfortunately, we don't have time to talk about it all day. So we're going to have to move on to the crystal ball. So, what is going to be happening over the next week, Tatton?
The budget's coming. It's the budget. It's all about the budget. Nothing else matters but the budget. Jeremy Hunt's now talking about getting rid of non-doms, which I think is just an amazing move. Just in one swoop, really screwing the opposition. It's definitely a ballsy move. I don't think it'll happen. I think he's just putting that out there to terrify everybody. I mean, vape taxes, national insurance cut. I mean, Wednesday, 12:30, don't go anywhere else.
Okay, if I have to. I hate budgets. I don't understand it. But thankfully we have Diane. Diane, our financial expert, what's on your crystal ball this week?
A really quick one. Expect to see lots about getting registered to vote. Okay. I know I talked about an election coming. It's still months and months off, but it doesn't matter because you can get registered whenever. You can do it now and then it's off your to-do list and you don't have to think about it again. And
if you are registered to vote, you can get involved in the campaign for the 32nd of August. which is important.
And it helps your credit score. So register. Right, that's all we have time for this week. So thank you very much, Tatton and Diane.
Thanks, Charlotte.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Vote day, 2nd of August. Bye.
Oh, God. Bye.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.